Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Living Your Life by Design, a conversation of self, health, and wealth, with the sole purpose of advancing and enhancing the lives of women. And now, your host, certified career consultant, life coach, and author, Kathy Holloway Hill.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Kathy Holloway Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
And we are so happy you are all able to join us this evening for a wonderful discussion about our health. Thank you to everyone that has already started joining and coming into the chat room, and we appreciate everyone who will be listening, calling in, and as well as the archive downloads. So welcome, welcome, welcome. We have a very wonderful topic to discuss this evening. And we will be joined by Blog Talk Radio's own Dr. Dawn Kernan, and she will be coming on the line here shortly. Dr. Dawn is a wonderful individual and a very good friend, and she has a radio show that airs each Saturday morning at 11 o'clock, and she always gives wonderful information on her show. But before we get to that, I just want to first ask how you're doing, Tony. I always like to find out how your week has been.
Week's been good. I've just kind of been relaxing a little bit and taking it easy, and it's been a good week, and I know it's been a good week for you, and it's a special day for you today, isn't it?
Yes, actually, it is a special day for me today. I wasn't going to say anything, but today is my birthday, and I'm very excited about that.
Happy birthday. I was going to say something about it. That's why I brought it up. So happy birthday to you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It is very special, and you know, I know everybody is a little apprehensive as they start to age and get older, but birthdays are always a blessing. When God allows you to see one more wonderful year, it's just a wonderful blessing to be able to experience that. And actually, this is a twofold special birthday for me because of the recent career change that I made, and I announced that last week on my show. I mentioned that I had moved out of my corporate career to pursue my true life's purpose, and I am so excited about that, and I really feel like I have been blessed and ordained by God to take this direction in my life and to be able to help others and enhance and advance their lives toward their life's purpose. So I am excited about that. This is a new beginning, a new year, a new career, and all wonderful things are in store. So I'm really looking forward to that. So, and one other thing I wanted to say, if you all would just bear with me for a second, there are a couple of people, and I actually don't see them in the chat room, but I just wanted to give a shout out to a couple of people. And I know typically Marissa Moss is typically in the chat room during this time, and I wanted to just give her a little shout-out. I know she's not here yet, but I might be able to do that a little bit later on. And there's also another very faithful follower that's usually in the chat room, and he's not here yet either, and that is Mr. Sean McDowell, but I'll talk about that a little later as well. But I do want to say thank you to the ones who have come into the chat room. Indy, thank you very much for joining us. DJ Squid and Your Time Now, Natasha, she's my girl. Thank you so much for joining us. And MD Shawid, thank you for joining us this evening. Welcome to you all. And the topic, as I mentioned a little bit ago, is to talk about our health. Now, I was actually inspired, Tony, to do this show. As you know, I was very inspired to do this show because of the early demise of comedian and actor Mr. Bernie Mac, and as well as the music icon legend Mr. Isaac Hayes. And both of their deaths shocked the nation, and especially Mr. Bernie Mac because he was so young, and it was just such a sad situation. And it just really inspired me to want to talk about these situations and help people to understand and get their questions answered and for everybody to know what it takes to take care of ourselves better. So without any further ado, I'm going to go ahead and bring Dr. Dawn on the line and just, you know, let her tell us a little bit about her background and her company and some of the things that she's working on and just introduce herself. Dr. Dawn, are you on the line?
Hey, I am. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you doing this evening?
I am great. Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. I am very blessed.
Yes, you are. So bye, would you Tony. Like me to start off by, hello, hi, Tony, how are you?
I'm fine, Dr. Dawn, and very happy to have this topic because we want to talk about becoming healthier and a lot of prevention because so many folks can become healthier if they just start taking care of themselves, so I'm excited.
Excellent. I really think that's a wonderful thing, and I want to thank you and commend you both for actually opening up your topics for health, because it's really an essential issue as far as minorities are concerned. We are the highest risk population when it comes to anything that's out there. Somehow we manage to take control and just succumb to the diseases that are out there, and most of the times they are preventable. So I am so glad that you took that opportunity to pull me away from just my own platform and allow me to share yours.
Absolutely. And Dr. Dawn, before I get started with, you know, getting into this dialogue, could you just tell our listeners a little bit about your background and your practice? And I think you also have a company and a website, and I would like to just plug that into the chat room so that everybody can know what your work is.
Absolutely. Okay, I am the co-founder. I'm an oncologist, and I am the co-founder of Solutions Cancer Resource Center. And at Solutions Cancer Resource Center, it's a nonprofit business which helps people within the various communities to help them with the resources that exist. They don't know that they are low-cost or free screenings that can help to detect whether they have cancer or not. And so that's one of our goals, is to get out there and let people know what's available. Another thing is to hold workshops and tell people about how they can prevent these diseases or how they can better handle the disease when they learn, and it's best for early detection. So we do those things. We go out, we give caregiver baskets to people who the person who takes care of the person who's terminally ill. We give transportation to people to and from chemo treatments. We have different drives that goes on for Solutions Cancer Resource Center. We are also giving gift baskets to children who are terminally ill or children who lost their parents who are terminally ill. So that's that aspect in terms of Solutions Cancer Resource Center. I'm also the founder of the Health and Wellness Center, and the Health and Wellness Center offers speech therapy, physical therapy. We're now adding screenings to it with the cancer screenings. And, we have nutritionists, social workers, nurses. We have different services, all in a healthy type atmosphere, giving people an opportunity to take yoga and meditation, and totally getting a holistic approach to health. And also with that company, I joined it with my other in terms of making a lot of different workshops for community outreaches. We do training for people to learn how to understand cultures. So when you're going in as a healthcare professional and you know that your patient is in the hospital, that's the setting where people are most concerned, and you're meeting different people from different cultures, and they don't have the same understanding, the same knowledge that you do. So you have to come in knowing that these people are concerned. So you have to allow them to express themselves and understand where they're coming from. So that's another important factor, because too many times physicians, nurses, and the healthcare providers, they go in and they just use everybody or address everybody on a basis where they're just going along, and they're not necessarily taking the time out to understand where this person is, what their concern is. I know that there are other social workers and psychologists and psychiatrists that are involved, but when you go in the room and you're coming in and their concerns are at its peak, you have to come in with the best bedside manner, and you have to listen to them. And that's one of the things I think is so essential. So that's a part of our training courses. So we do a lot of different things, and I can go on and on, but, you know, with respect to time and the questions and the things that I'd love to discuss, I'm going to just stop there. But, yeah, those are some of the things that we do at my businesses.
Excellent, excellent. That's great. Now, Dr. Dawn, I also want to let everyone know that Dr. Dawn Kernan has a radio show here on Blog Talk Radio, and it airs each Saturday morning at 11 a.m. Is that correct?
Yes, each Saturday 11 at 11 a.m. Yes, that's Blog Talk Radio, Health and Wellness.
Absolutely.
With Dr. Kernan, yes.
Make sure you tune in for that because she has wonderful information every week. I would like to start out just kind of focusing on some of the diseases that, in my opinion, I mean, you, of course, you're the doctor and you may have a different opinion on which diseases are the most prevalent. I know diabetes is definitely very high up on the list.
Yes, it is. Like I mentioned before, in our culture, in our, in terms of ethnicities, minorities are necessarily the highest risk for everything, pretty much. When you hear about heart diseases, that's where we're leading in that area. When you hear about diabetes, we're totally leading in that area. We're leading in cancer. We're leading in so many different things. When they break down, when the numbers are broken down into ethnicities, you're going to see that the blacks, the African Americans, anything to do with us, we're always the ones that succumb at the highest rate.
So, why is that?
Well, there are a lot of factors that are involved. Some of it is the barriers to access to care. Some of the things has to do with the insurance. A lot of it also has to do with our own self-awareness of our health, how we eat, how we make sure we make different appointments to go and see the doctors, and how timely we do. Most times we don't go to the doctors because we wait until we feel sick to go to the doctors. If you're not feeling sick, you don't go for an annual checkup. You're feeling you're okay. And until you feel that symptom of something not so right, then sometimes people do go. And sometimes people wait until it's a little bit more unbearable before they go in. And at that point, most of the times it's too late.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you a question about that because my significant other, you know, he's a very, very important person in my life, and the last time he went to the doctor had told him that his fasting blood glucose level was 105.
Okay.
And the doctor told him that was a little elevated, but you know he kind of, you know, just kind of shrugged it off a little bit and said, "Well, if I start having symptoms, then I'll do something about it." But at that point, it'd be too late. So, in your opinion, what is a normal blood glucose level, and is 105 in the normal range?
Well, it's just a little above the normal range. It's not necessarily what we would say a good thing, because when we always want to try that, make sure that everybody is within the frame. Like, for example, someone called today and said their blood pressure is low, and they were saying they don't take their pressure medicine because it's normally high. Well, once you get the different medications that are prescribed for you, and that's another issue, it's really about giving you the opportunity to maintain at the normal level. So that's one of the things that you have to say. When his is like at 105, that's not too, you know, alarming at that point, because what they consider normal in terms of the glucose test, it varies, and it also varies because when they also take into consideration your height, your weight, different things are also given. So there's a range that it goes in, and it also has to do with, has he ever been diagnosed with any kinds of early signs of diabetes or anything like that?
No. He's very healthy. Typically, he hasn't been diagnosed with anything. I'll say that. His weight is a little. He's not severely obese or anything like that. But you know, he's the typical, just a typical guy, and that, you know, he has a little extra weight in the midsection area. But you know, nothing serious. He is in his 40s, so. I'm just concerned.
Absolutely.
I'm very preventive minded.
Okay, absolutely.
I'm very proactive.
One of the things is that within when he's doing the fasting and during that period, it should be below 100. But then during that period, the level is between 100 and 125. Do you understand? So there's a range between 100 to 125, which is okay. But it should be a little below 100. That's where it should be.
Now, when you're fasting, though, if you go in first thing in the morning and you take a blood test and you're fasting, because the last time I went in, actually, when I had my test done, I was fasting, and I'm very, very thin, and mine was 100.
Well, okay, and that's where it's really it doesn't have to do with just being thin. You know, it has to do with... Yeah. So one of the things that you have to think about, because that's the concern there, is that might be you're predisposed to diabetes. And that's another important factor that I would encourage your listeners to know, is that it's important to know your family history as much as possible and your family health history, because there's certain things that we don't know about our backgrounds. My family, for one, they're very private about certain illnesses, and they don't really discuss those things openly because they felt it was a private matter between that person who was facing the illness at that time. And then there was also societal stigmas that were attached to different diseases, even cancer. So there's an urgency now for us to become more proactive and make sure we tell our children as much as we can, or get a knowledge of or a sense of what we are predisposed to. Because when your glucose levels are a little high, that can give a signal that you can become diabetic. Doesn't necessarily mean you will, but you can. And then that'll have to mean that you'll have to change your diet. You'll have to watch what you eat. And, you know, most people, they don't want to give up certain things. They want to just stay within the same range of, you know, eating their sweets and all the different
comfort
things that they enjoy.
Now, can you explain a little bit, Dr. Dawn, about insulin resistance? Because I know this can play a role in your glucose level sometimes being a teeny bit out of whack. You know, if you're a little bit insulin resistant, can you talk about that and what causes that, why that happens?
Oh, absolutely. And when we talk about the resistance in that happens a lot with a lot of people who they're not necessarily understanding. If you have, like, insulin resistance, you know, your muscle, fat, and liver cells do not use it properly. It's just saying that you're not able to process it. It's a thing where what the insulin does, it's like after you eat your food, it's broken down into glucose. And a simple sugar is the main source of energy for your body's cells. But if your body cells cannot use that glucose without the insulin, so then this hormone is produced insulin is produced by the pancreas. So it helps to keep your cells, and it converts the glucose and everything into energy. So when you are resistant to that, that brings on a lot of complications. So if you have prediabetes, or you might have a greater risk for developing type 2 diabetes. So it's really important that we try to find whatever it is. Now, when did you, was this something that you yourself had? Were you insulin?
Are you talking about insulin resistance?
Yeah.
No. Like I said, I'm a very proactive person when it comes to health. And the day that actually I was at work, this was before I left my corporate job, and I went to the nurse and I asked her to take my blood pressure, which was pretty low, and I asked her to do my blood glucose because I hadn't had anything to eat.
Uh-huh.
So she actually did one of those little finger prick tests.
Okay, yeah, the stick test.
And she measured it at 100, and she said that it was kind of on the high end of normal.
Right, it is, yes.
For not having had anything to eat yet that morning, because it was first thing in the morning. So then I started looking up insulin resistance on the web.
Right.
And it gives you
might get mixed messages from it, because usually with insulin resistant people, they're mostly overweight. And it's usually, you know, when you have excess weight, that also contributes to the insulin resistance, because you have too much fat and that fat interferes with the muscle's ability to use the insulin. But that's not necessarily it, because it also gives, you can also say, because someone doesn't exercise and they don't burn that energy and they don't burn that fat, and that could also be a reason why they're insulin resistant. But it also has to do with your family, your genetic background. It runs in your family where if it's something that someone else has, someone else in your family line has, most likely a mother, father, or someone within a direct line, that can also be something that is genetically involved in terms of insulin resistance.
Now, Dr. Dawn, I want to ask you, just changing up a little bit, because one thing that I've noticed when it comes to particularly women, they're being stricken with a considerable amount more of heart disease. We've seen the numbers grow considerably, and the warning signs for women are so much different. Can you speak a little bit about that? Because I know I know a couple of people that actually that I work with, colleagues that I work with, that relatively young and have had heart attacks,
right.
and they had no sign that they were having a heart attack until it got to the point that they had to go to the hospital.
Oh, absolutely. That's a very good question, and that's something that a lot of people are not necessarily aware of, that things are different, and some people don't even know what the symptoms are because they assume it has to do with your chest when it's tightening. They would automatically assume that that's what it is. And, you know, a lot of women, too, they don't realize that they're having this attack because they're looking for that same restrictive type feeling, or they think, okay, then that means this must be my heart. But one of the things that, because we are made differently, we have different patterns when it comes to having these attacks, and some women may have it where in a large part they, it may be like maybe a tingling in the arm or something, and that's something that happens on both ends. But women, in particularly, their pattern is a little bit, it's not, it doesn't vary that much from the men, I would say. But because men too, they have different they have different symptoms, but not. Because, and that's another thing I wanted to discuss, but I'll discuss that in a little later, because a lot of the times women and men have different symptoms for different diseases, but some of the diseases are so similar in their symptoms that it's hard to detect which one it is. So that's another one of those things that we have to look into, determining which one it is. And for women, you can feel a chest pain, but you may not necessarily, but they might be in your left shoulder, your neck, your arm, your back, or your jaw. You know, some of these things may not necessarily, somebody might feel like they have a heartburn. Do you understand? It depends. There are different things where you might be considering that, maybe I should just take like an Pepto-Bismol or something because maybe my stomach is unsettled. So there are different things
If you take the Pepto-Bismol and nothing changes, then that should kind of give you an indication that maybe it's not.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It will give you, because that's another thing I would like to address, too, is that a lot of times people tend to self-diagnose. And it's okay sometimes to think that you know maybe what the cause of the problem is, but a lot of the times you really need to see your physician. You need to go to the doctor and get yourself checked out. Don't ignore your body's signals. Your body's telling you something's wrong. You might have difficulty breathing, or you might have shortness of breath, you know. And you might think, well, maybe because, oh, yeah, I noticed I put on a couple of pounds. Maybe I just need to work out. At that point, your body's telling you, yeah, you might need to lose some weight, but right now something is happening. Maybe I can't wait for you to go and lose those pounds. Maybe what I need you to do is take me in and get myself checked. So a lot of things we really need to do is not necessarily considered like you feel like a little indigestion, which it happens a lot with women, or heartburn, like I mentioned. These are things that can give you that false sense of relief where you feel, well, it's really nothing much. You might feel lightheaded. I mean, we can go the whole gamut, because we cannot necessarily, I have to be careful in how I say it, because I don't want anyone to assume that women and men are absolutely different across the board. some things overlap, and sometimes we do have similar symptoms, but sometimes ours just vary. So it's one of those things where you can't assume that, oh, well, because it's not in my right arm, it's not that, because, you know, that's where men get it. That's the same thing where men felt they couldn't get breast cancer. But now that they're understanding, yeah, we can. It may not be as prevalent as it is in women, but we do too suffer from the diseases. So, I mean, we have to be very careful when it comes to our health. We cannot necessarily just hold it within some boundaries. We have to understand that it can be just about anything.
Now, if you guys don't mind, I'm going to try to go to the phone real quick here because I see a couple of lines. I want to just make sure they're listening and don't have a question. Caller, you're on the line. Do you have a question or are you just listening?
Kathy?
Yes.
Hi. Okay, Natasha, just listening. How are you?
Oh, hi, Natasha. How are you doing? You're just listening?
Yes, ma'am. I'll be back in the chat area in a minute. Okay.
Okay. Wonderful, wonderful. Okay, I'll put you back on mute. Okay, now I'm just going to kind of shift gears here a little bit, Dr. Dawn, if you don't mind. And I'm probably going to talk about something that may embarrass a few people, and I'm sorry if it does, but this is a very important topic because it's something that we all tend to ignore at one time or another. And that's the problem of colon cancer. And I know one of the things that people may ignore quite a bit is the fact that they may have a lot of constipation or, issues with having bowel movements. And that's a very important symptom that you probably shouldn't ignore. So if you could talk a little about that, Dr. Dawn, how important
sure.
it is to include fiber and not ignore the fact that you're constantly constipated.
Oh, absolutely. And our colon needs flushing, and that seems to be one of those things that a lot of people don't really want to even – I have a lot of male patients who hate to even think that they'll have to go and get tested. It's just one of those things that a lot of people just don't like to even deal with. But once you have that, and once that disease overcomes you, you're in trouble if you don't do anything. It's something that is prevalent, again, within our community, within our ethnic background. Minorities, we do get that, and we do tend to suffer, and that's because we don't eat a lot of fiber. You know, you need to eat fiber, and you need to have a low-fat diet in terms of your fiber should be what should be scraping and scrubbing and cleaning out that area. It's that roughage that needs to go in there and do its job. But what happens is we have such a high-fat diet that goes in and it takes up most of the space, and then you know the fat gets very hard, almost unless you're touching a brick wall. The fat hardens up like you won't believe. And then it restricts the colon from doing its job. And
sure, they know.
It becomes really clogged. What was that?
I said, oh, I'm sure they know how hard it can get.
Okay. Yes, it sure can. So one of the things that people need to know that the diseases of the colon, it includes Crohn's disease, it includes ulcerative colitis, and these diseases are also things that can be prevented. If they might be hard to diagnose some diseases, and that's why you need to get yourself checked. That's why it's very important for men to make sure that when you are, I think, about 50,
right.
and above, that they start saying, okay, this is the time that you should. But I would say, because it's such a prevalent disease within our community, I would dare say that people should get checked a little younger so we can get a good look at how things are before we get to 50, and because that's the range where they normally pick it up. Doesn't mean that it's not happening prior to that time. So we
And
have
I know
to be,
another.
Mm-hmm, sure.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say another one of those diseases that is, because I know it was a few people in my family that have had that, was diverticulitis.
Oh, diverticulitis, yes.
Diverticulitis, right.
Mm-hmm, yeah. That's another disease that a lot of people don't really know of, because one of the things people think of is just pretty much the main diseases, and they don't necessarily know what other things are until it affects them. So one of the things we can talk about is diverticulitis, which is a condition in the pockets, in the pouches within the large intestine. And the large intestine is the main part, where, which is also the colon. So we have that area where everything's going through that whole intestine, which is a long tube, and it goes in and it takes the waste. I know you said this is something that most people would not like to talk about, but
okay.
You know, this is something where this is the area in that intestine right there where we're trying to get all the waste material out. So the feces are coming out in that area, and it's very important to keep it as clean and as free as possible so that it can push out all of that out of right into the rectum, out of your body. So when we have this, what's happening is the diverticulitis is when you don't have that ability to get the waste out, and it starts to accumulate, and it, you know, the pouch and the sac, and it starts to bulge. Some people become impacted, and there are different things where people have had to have different procedures. I won't go into it in depth because I don't want to scare anyone into going to get themselves checked. It's really important to get yourself checked. There's certain procedures that they can go and take things out of the colon, but we are trying to get you to not get to that point.
Right. And also, I want to make sure you talk a little bit about the symptoms as well as how you can get diverticulitis, because I've heard that it comes from straining as a result of constipation, once again.
Well, most people, in terms of symptoms, a lot of people don't have too many symptoms. Some people don't, in terms of the medical community, they don't see that many people have symptoms per se. Some people may say they have abdominal pain, and some people may have constipation, which is followed by diarrhea. You know, like it feels like you're constipated, but then loose stool comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And another one of the symptoms, I believe, is bloating. Yes, bloating. Some people, and that's also with people being impacted. There is a bloating because it's really not coming out. And some people says, you know, I have this sharp pain. And again, this is not going to be the best kind of news to share, but pardon me, but then if they pass gas, then they feel better. Those are some of those symptoms that are within that category in terms of diverticulitis.
I'm sorry, Dr. Dong. Go ahead.
No, I mean, when people can get into, it can get into different stages where people might vomit or some people might have fever, and that's another thing. If you know that you have problems with your bowels and that, and you have these other symptoms, then that's the key. But doesn't mean because you have a fever or you're vomiting that you have diverticulitis. You know what I'm saying? You have to be specific as to what other things are going on. So a lot of the symptoms are similar in different realms, but of diseases, but you have to know what's going on along with that. You can have cramps, mild, and they can be just suddenly, and then they can go, you know, without you having to pass gas. You know, you might have this urge to use the bathroom, but nothing's happening. But that happens to all of us, but this doesn't mean we have diverticulitis. One of the things that I would like to say, though, is if you have any sort of blood, that's a key indicator that something's wrong. If you have like blood clots, little bright red blood clots, or you know how it's like a burgundy, a dark red stain type thing? If you see that within your bowels, then you need to go and have your colon checked.
Gotcha. One thing I wanted to ask in that aspect, and I guess maybe you can help in this, because I know I work with the health department in Indianapolis, and also the Cancer Society in Indianapolis, working with them in their cancer program with the prostate and colon and things like that. But I know one thing that we found, and maybe you can speak on this a little bit, a lot of folks, the emergency visit is their doctor's visit. They don't go until something is wrong. How and what can we do to be more preventative? Because that's one of the things that I know that causes a lot of the problems. We wait until it's too late in many instances, or until we get these massive symptoms or something's just going wrong. How can we be more proactive instead of reactive?
That's an excellent question, and that's something that you will not believe. It's been in so many different symposiums, and as you sat within the different health agencies and organizations that you have been involved with, you know that's a major cause for concern. They are always talking and trying to figure out how can we combat this issue. And I believe it strongly has to do with understanding cultures and you're understanding the culture of the person. Our people in general, we don't trust doctors. Or we feel that they have alternative motives or they're being paid off by the pharmaceutical companies. In some cases, people refer to the Tuskegee experiment where people looked and they hold on to that they don't even want to participate in any kind of studies because they hold on to that because there's such a distrust for the medical community that helps people to stay away from it. One of the things, too, it has to do with the fear of going and finding out that something is terribly wrong and not wanting to find out and to then become so concerned where you're saying, what am I going to do? You're worried, you're overcome with this disease and you're stressed out and your whole world seems to just stand still and you go into such a funk that you feel better off not knowing. And one of the things I think we need to do to address that is to start discussing health in other ways other than just the doom side of it. But we can start talking about it in almost everyday conversations, addressing it, and it should be in the churches. It should be a part of the church community because churches hold up where the funerals are. They have all their people come in, and they have all these different things where we have the services there for the funeral, but then when it comes to discussing the diseases, it's almost like the doors are not necessarily open. They're not necessarily closed either, but they don't open up the dialogue. And so the churches have to get involved. People have to begin to think of their health in a way that they think of anything else. And so if the straight across the board, because if the health community is the only one talking about it, then people are not necessarily going to listen because they feel that's what the health community is for. But if you start to break into different arenas and you go into different organizations or different venues, then you start talking about it and you start introducing great taste in food. One of the things we did was we had this health fair, but we invited the restaurants, the local restaurants, to prepare their best healthy meal so that the people could taste it and see that they're not necessarily missing out on all the other things that they could if they would only try this meal once in a while. Just try to find a way to eat something healthier and try to eat it from maybe your favorite restaurant and see what they offer. A lot of people, myself included, I go to McDonald's. I'm not looking at the salad menu. I'm looking directly at the Big Mac meal. And so, but I don't eat that often. But they have the salad there available for us. But a lot of people don't necessarily take part of that. You know exactly what you're going for, whether it's the quarter pound or whatever. However, we have to start introducing people to these things more openly, discussing it in the church where the nurses and the doctors go to churches too. In my church, I am actively involved in getting meetings and different things together so that people could know. And with the nurses, you get into your churches and find out who's the healthcare professional in here. And if there isn't, call the healthcare organization and gather those people and have some kind of healthcare forum and get your members there. Or if you know that they're not going to come on any other day other than a Sunday, after church have a table out there and hand out some things for people. You know, we have to become creative. But I do think that the medical community cannot be the only ones to discuss this because people tend to ignore us. People will go more to a cookout or a big African-American day fair rather than a health awareness day. You will see people in droves at the festivals and fairs. But if it has anything to do with health up on that banner and it's just that they see, they're not coming in. Well, not in droves. So we
now, let me... Mm-hmm. I was just going to ask Tony about, you had asked a great question about, you know, how do you be more proactive. I think a large part of that is fear, and I'm just trying to figure out how can we help people to eliminate some of the fear, because they're afraid to go because they're afraid of bad news, but if you stay proactive and stay up on things, it won't be bad news. I mean, if you take care of yourself, even if you don't do everything perfectly right, at least if you try to do some things right. So how do you help people to eliminate that fear?
One of the things that I would say that I do personally in terms of getting people is just talking about all the other things that they take care of. I mean, on my show I always mention you take care of your house, your cars, and the things that are most important to you. However, your body is the most important thing that you have.
That's a good point.
And so one of the things that I try to tell people about is eating healthy. A lot of times I just never knew until I got into medicine how many people just don't like fruits. And I think fruits are like the most delicious treats that you can have. Not that I don't eat cookies and potato chips and all the other things, but I love fruits. I love grapes and the different types of citrus fruits. I love it. I look forward to when the cherry season is in and, you know, all these different things. But people have to start changing their diet. And parents have to start introducing the fruits to their children at an earlier age. Children are growing up not knowing. Oh, they're familiar with the fruits, but there's something that they've shrugged themselves off. So, oh, I don't like that, unless it's in a syrup of sugary fruit cocktail mix, and some people might eat it, or if it's something masked that they don't have it in its fresh state. We also have to start changing our diets. We have to start, like I said before, we have to introduce people to how it can be a good, why these restaurants are making these meals like this, is so that you can see there's alternatives. This is how you can enjoy this steamed salmon meal. You don't have to fry the whiting every week. You know, start introducing different things into your meal. I'm not saying you can't have a fried piece of chicken. I'm not saying, but if you do, try to take the skin off. And if you fry it, you'll see it's just as delicious. You try to do different things to eliminate the fat, not saying you cannot fry it. I know olive oil is expensive, but so is the Big Mac meal. You know, if I've taken my children to McDonald's, and it was just a few of us there, and by the time the bill was, you know, they give you the amount that you have to pay, it's like, wow, you know, this is really something. Money is an issue in every aspect. People are paying for what they want. Now, it's up to you to choose what's the best for you.
Let me just ask this quick question, Tony. And I know when I ask it, you're going to be like, oh, yes, please give her the answer. Because Tony is familiar with a few of my habits, and this is one of them he's very familiar with. And I want to get your opinion on supplements, because one of the things that I do, and I'm going to just put it out there because I know it's probably not – a very healthy habit, and I want to get your opinion about it, Dr. Dawn.
Okay.
Oftentimes, I'm very thin built, and I do have an issue with eating.
Okay.
And a lot of times, I don't like to eat. And oftentimes, I don't eat a lot, but what I will do is take supplements so that I can get my nutrition, because I don't eat a lot of food. So what is your opinion about supplements and I can't think of the name of one of those drinks, like Boost and Ensure, those types of drinks?
Okay, yeah. It's not, I would say to you that it's most important that you eat, because all of the nutrients and the things that you need are really in your natural food states. Now, dietary supplements are okay, but they shouldn't be what you need to use because you don't feel like eating. It's not a healthy thing to do. And I understand you just don't have the appetite. You just don't feel like eating. But it's not necessarily a good thing. There's a lot of controversy about supplements anyway. So it depends on what supplement you're taking, who's the maker, are they indeed putting in the right amount of dosages of nutrients and things that you need. I mean, there's a lot that you have to understand when it comes to these supplements and these dietary different things that people are putting out there. Not that you're taking dietary supplements, but you're taking supplements to substitute to get what you feel that you've missed within your meals. That is something that you can do occasionally if you miss a meal here and there, but that's not something that you should do consistently and ignore eating. Sure, and all those things are good, but they're not something that you should use on a daily basis or even that often.
Mm-hmm. Now, I wanted to ask, because this is on the other side, because so many people nowadays look into food as that comfort mechanism. They look at food as the conqueror of all. Talk about that a little bit, because and when you were talking about eating healthy, one thing that a lot of folks will tell you, and I hear this from a lot of folks, it is expensive to eat healthy. It's a lot less expensive to eat, you know, unhealthy, and a lot of folks do that. I mean, they go to, you can go to McDonald's and spend $3 and get a very unhealthy meal, but it'll fill you up, versus that same $3 won't buy you anything on the healthy side, too much of anything, as far as the fruits and vegetables, because of that kind of thing. So talk a little bit about that, because we need to change that mindset, and I'm one of the individuals, because I love sweets. And
okay.
and when it comes to that, so when it comes to sweets and things like that, I'll do what I need to do, and I'll eat until I'm filled, and then I'll say, I got to have my sweets, only because I like those kinds of things. So talk a little bit about that, because a lot of folks do on the opposite side of what Kathy was talking about, and they do it overabundantly.
Okay, great. Now, when it comes to eating, when you go to the supermarket, when you go to the local fruit stand or your grocer, I want you to now look at the fruits and vegetables and really take a good look at the prices that they have. When you go to your next fast food restaurant, they do have this dollar menu. Most people aren't ordering the dollar menu meals. Most people are ordering the meal that comes with the fries and the drinks, you know, the whole entire meal, and sometimes they don't say supersize it anymore, I think, but they say whether you want large, medium, or small. So what I would say is take a very good look now when you go to the grocery and you go to McDonald's or to any other fast food restaurant. Please note, it's not that much different. McDonald's isn't that much cheaper than going to the supermarket and getting some fruits and getting some vegetables. There are a lot of green grocers, or they say farmers markets, in a lot of communities. People don't go to them. And these farmers markets are geared to us in terms of our ethnicities, our background. They're in our communities to introduce this stuff. But what do? We walk right past them and keep going. We don't even give it an opportunity. I mean, every now and again you would see people, they're now putting the farmers markets right in front of hospitals, or trying to get them in right in the middle of a sidewalk somewhere where people can't miss them. They're not over in the corner somewhere. Yet people will still bypass them because they're not thinking about, people don't want to eat tomatoes if they want to make a Big Mac. Nobody's thinking about that. They're looking at what they prefer, the taste, what tastes better to them. If they knew that, if they went to the doctor and he gave them a big scare, or she said, listen, if you don't do this, you're going to die, that somehow triggers something off, and then all of a sudden they can now tolerate the tomatoes, or they can now get some lettuce and put that in their plates. There are different things that really sets the signal off. But when we keep saying things like the food is, maybe back a little while, a couple years ago, we could use that the fruits and vegetables are much more expensive. It's really not that anymore. I would say I have seen fruits, they're very expensive, yes. Vegetables are expensive, but it's because we're not necessarily looking at it for what it is. We're valuing that we can get the Big Mac meal for $5.49 or almost $6 for a Big Mac meal once the taxes are included. Now, you go to the supermarket, what would you do? Are you going in the supermarket and looking that I could use the $6 here? Or are you saying, you have to also make that choice. You have to go and start looking and seeing, is this true, or is this something that somebody says so we all take it and we run with it and we live with that? We have to really take a good look and see what is it that's different in our communities and how can we make things differently. And so, therefore, the next time you go to the supermarket, instead of going to McDonald's and picking up that meal, pick up some fruits that will equal the same amount. I know it may not fill you the same way, it may not taste the same way, but it gives you an alternative.
And if you don't mind, I just wanted to add to that, Dr. Dawn, because Tony mentioned that, you know, he has to have his sweets, and I know a lot of people are in that same boat. And I think if people would just get a little bit creative, I mean, I guess I need to get creative too in things that I eat, but if they would get a little bit creative, and because you can make a really nice fruit dessert with strawberries and bananas, and it's a lot of good yogurt out there. You could pour yogurt over top of it, like as a little topping or something. And I don't think whipped cream is very high in calories. I think the Cool Whip is, you know, a nice little treat. You could put that over top of fruit, and that could make a nice dessert.
Absolutely. I have to say, I have a chocolate cake at home in my refrigerator, and everything is within moderation. I eat everything, too. I just think that what we need to do is understand everything has its place. When we were children and we were growing up, we're in a society, as we have gone on and we've made so much progress over time, what we have done as a society is we've overindulged. I don't know about you, but when we were growing up, maybe Sundays was the biggest day of the week for a meal where after we were finished we had ice cream or cake or ice cream and cake or something. Didn't mean that we were poor. It didn't mean that we couldn't have it any other time, but our parents were very careful in how they fed us. And so I think that's another thing. We just overindulge, and then we look back, and then we wonder, why are we in such a poor state health-wise when there's so much progress in the health field in terms of we could live longer, but we're living longer with diseases. That's unfair. We shouldn't be living longer with a disease where right now in this day and age we don't even have to have the diseases based on the progress we've made. So, yes, I would suggest we make some fruit salad sometimes. Be creative. When you go to the supermarket and you pick up that ice cream and that cake, you know, you can have that. But it doesn't mean that you have to have that all the time. You have to have other things that you can also use alternatively. Try out sometimes just to make, let me get some fruits and just like throw it in a bowl. And it's delicious. I do it. But I also have cake. I also have ice cream. And I also train my kids to understand that we can have these things, but we should all have it within moderation. And that's one of the things we have to do. And everything now, all the bags of foods and snacks are huge. So we have to start to monitor. Because I have found myself eating chips, and then before I know it, the bag's empty.
And it's easy to do. It's very easy to do. Yeah.
And then you feel horrible when you're done. But you know what? It's self-control. And we all have to be very, very careful with how we take things on, and we say, okay, oh, that slice of cake was good. I think I'm going to have another one. It's easy for us to fall into that, but it takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of discipline to start thinking of your body as something that you need to survive. We just take our bodies for granted, and we take other things, and we take so much more care of them than we do of ourselves.
And if people would just take a little bit of time, I'm sorry, Tony, but if people would just take a little bit of time to investigate some things, because there are some really tasty foods out there that are great alternatives. For instance, instead of the potato chips, there are a lot of nuts that are very healthy. Almonds, walnuts. I mean, I think that's a healthy alternative to potato chips and
absolutely. There are a lot of alternatives that are out there, and we should take advantage of them. Sometimes people, like I myself, I'm not a rice cake eater because it just tastes like air to me. So
I love rice cakes.
Yeah, but I know some people who love, you know, they love rice cakes and those types of things. I'm not a rice cake eater. I need something a little bit more, you know, filling. But that's a healthy thing. I would not go and pick up the fat-free cake. I want, if I'm having cake, I'm going to have cake. I'm just not going to eat the whole cake all at once. You know, I'm not the one that'll go and get, oh, that's light ice cream. I want to taste the ice cream. I've had ice cream all my life. I'm just not going to eat the whole carton. So we all have to understand things are okay. What you need to do is, how are you going to monitor your intake? We are eating way too much. And that is breaking our bodies down.
Dr. Dawn, I've got to ask this, and please speak on this before we run out of time. We're talking about, you know, some prevention. We're talking about, you know, what we take in and how we eat. But speak a little bit about the importance of exercise, because so many people are being affected and the illnesses are coming on because their bodies are being ravaged because they're not healthy and they're not getting out and exercising.
Absolutely. Great question. Exercising is extremely important, and I see people who are afraid to walk. They take their cars a couple blocks over or very short distances to get something instead of walking. And one of the things I always encourage people to do is take advantage of your summer and go for a walk. Enjoy it. Some people are not going to go jogging. Some people are not runners. Some people don't want to go to the gym. But you don't have to pay to go to the gym to do it, but you can as well. It's really, really important. You have to find a way to get your energy burning. You have to burn that. You have to burn the fat. You have to use it up, or else once the fat builds up, there's so many diseases that can come, and it depends on what you are predisposed to. You can have a predisposition to heart disease, diabetes, cancer, coronary heart diseases, different things that are coming up, even sleep apnea, hyperlysogloria, all these different things are just out there where people are not relating to in terms of their exercise. Exercising is extremely important. You don't have to jog. You don't have to run a marathon. You don't have to. You just have to do things gradually and
exactly.
go at your pace. And when you start finding that you're doing things consistently, lay on the floor, do a couple of sit-ups, do some push-ups, go for a walk. You know, maybe go a couple laps around the ballpark or something within your neighborhood or around the streets or whatever that you can find. Do some walking. Go up the stairs and come down and, you know, do some squats. And you don't have to have weights to do the squats. Just pretend you're sitting on your chair and get back up just before you hit the seat itself. You know, do and extend your hands forward. Do a couple of those things. And I'm going to tell you, the more you do these things consistently, the easier it gets and the better it is, and your body really benefits from it. So it's really very important, because when you don't exercise and you're building up the fat, all of this, and don't believe the report that tells you that it's okay to be overweight, because I'm seeing that that's something that's coming out now, because what you're going to find out shortly in the near future, you're going to hear, well, it's not necessarily okay to be overweight, because now people are becoming comfortable with that message. It's not. Your body should not be taking on excess weight, and you know it. You know it because when you start to run or you start to walk or you start to do different things, you can feel the difference. And when you feel that difference in your body, it's telling you your body is doing extra work that it doesn't need to do and it's not necessary.
And I'm just going to jump in here and add to that. That was a great answer. I appreciate that. But people, the other thing I just wanted to add is that, like Dr. Dawn said, everybody may not be a marathon runner or anything like that, but even if you could start small, when you go to the mall or when you go to the grocery store, don't look for the closest parking spot that you can find to the door. You know, try to park far away and give yourself an opportunity to walk a little bit. Or if you're at work, take the stairs instead of the elevator. Those are small things that you can start with, at least to just kind of get you in the mode of moving around.
Absolutely, I agree. You really need to start taking little steps to begin with, and then you eventually move on. When I started to exercise after I gave birth, I walked a couple laps around the park, and then I started jogging one lap, and then I will walk the next four, and then I'll just jog one. I mean, I couldn't keep up, but then I started jogging two and walking two, and then I started jogging, and then time came where I can jog 12 all at once, and then I went up to 16 laps. I mean, you temper yourself, but there was a time when I wasn't doing that because it was too much for me. So everything has to do with you taking the time to be patient with yourself and just giving yourself a little at a time. Eventually, it'll all pay off.
And I, you know, I really hate to end this discussion. It has been absolutely wonderful, but we're coming up on our last 40 seconds here. And Dr. Dawn Kernan, thank you so much for joining us this evening. You have been a wealth of knowledge and information for us. Our listeners really appreciate it. And if you guys would like to, Dr. Dawn is on Saturday morning, so you can get her information from her show, or you can email me and I'll give you the information. But unfortunately, we're going to have to say goodnight to everyone. It has been wonderful. Dr. Dawn, thank you ever so kindly for joining us this evening.
You're welcome.
And thank you so much. And I'm Kathy Holloway-Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
And we will see you same time next week. Good night, everyone.